You're listening to the Peter Ryan Report on Coinspice.io. You're listening to the Peter Ryan Report on Coinspice.io.
This would be episode one of the Peter Ryan Report on CoinSpice. Peter's a pretty interesting voice in the space, and we've had him on a couple of times now. Always appreciate his takes, and from time to time, Peter will just come on and he'll just wax on issues of the day, and I think you're going to find what he has to say extremely valuable. So first off, Peter, thanks very much for doing this, man.
Yeah, this is exciting. Get to talk about all the crypto thoughts that are trapped in my head, and really the only outlet is Twitter at this point. So it's great that I can get these out in another medium.
Boom. So a big issue right now, whether it's sock puppets or the banning of accounts, social media has really become crypto's battleground. And I'm not sure whether we all anticipated that in the beginning or felt that's where it would be. Maybe we thought we'd fight it out in merchant adoption, or there'd be some ogre government coming in to shut us down, the man, as it were. But it turns out that social media is really where crypto comes together to hammer out our deepest ideas, right?
Yeah. We all talk about how crypto is this decentralized network of distributed participants all around the world. There are no leaders. We're all free economic agents collaborating in this process. And while that's a mouthful to say, there's very real ways that this manifests. And so crypto Twitter is one way that this comes about. And a lot of times I look at it as, you know, this is our virtual parliament that we are all contributing to. And, you know, it's not a state. It's not a company boardroom necessarily, but it's this platform where we all get together to hash out issues and come to some agreement, or at least make the thoughts that everyone's thinking about forecasting where a project is going, the merits of one decision or the other, or the stability of a crypto company that's out there. This gives us the ability to be transparent and open to talk about all these issues, because if we did not have this platform, what we end up having are secret meetings, people conspiring in closed doors, and that doesn't really go well with this whole open sourced ethos that we try to promote.
Yeah, and it really is the digital public square. It's where we're hashing a lot of this out. And Twitter, the example that you've seized on, has become a lightning rod, because I think it's fair to say that maybe Bitcoin and the broader crypto idea was at least begun, or its genesis was really hammered out on message boards and through email. And so now there's a greater light on it through Twitter, and Twitter's a publicly traded company. It is a ginormous platform. And so there are subdivisions of Twitter that are really just almost like Boolean networks that keep encircling parts of one another. And so you get like there's like Black Twitter, there's now Crypto Twitter, there's all sorts of different, you know, sub genres and subcultures. And so it's really, really, really important digital real estate, right? Like there are people that are actually paying to buy accounts and followers, and there's all sorts of bots. I mean, this is an industry within itself, right?
Oh, for sure. Crypto Twitter is this beast that no one really knows how to exactly define or behave within. It's really this organic, like I said, parliament, or this ongoing conversation that everyone's having, and to that degree, like you mentioned, we are seeing these tribes form. And I believe there's a company out there called Hive One who is trying to cluster these tribes using Twitter data and identify who's in which tribe based on who they follow, who follows them, who they tweet with, all this types of stuff. And you then start to identify, you know, the coin tribe that you might be part of, whether, you know, you're following BTC, XRP, or, you know, ETH, all these different clusters emerge on Twitter. And for what it's worth, probably spend, you know, a more biased amount of time within themselves than actually cross-pollinating over. It's really only when we start to see these industry-wide events occur that you break out of the clusters and you start, you know, really seeing how these things mix and seeing how you go from ETH Twitter and BTC Twitter to, you know, crypto Twitter in general. So it's really an interesting phenomenon to look at and see how then once those interactions happen, you have different norms, different customs, different shared assumptions. Particularly, you could theorize the Austrian economic norms that are within BTC and other currencies that prioritize that viewpoint, you know, really take almost an obnoxious righteousness when talking with a lot of people, let's say, in ETH, where they are less prone to those sorts of ideologies and are a little bit more open to the idea of not needing sort of this store of value argument to precede using it as a world computer and all that type of stuff. So that's where you actually get probably some cool social dynamics colliding and seeing what, you know, who's the winner of that debate come out, because getting trapped in clusters is good for actually getting concentrated sort of success done in your particular project. But to actually solve these issues of, like, you know, is proof of work or proof of stake the path forward? Is it on-chain or off-chain scaling? Any of these debates that are sort of really not like one coin specifically, but the crypto industry in general, having these open debates with different parties actually produces sort of a stronger end result than, you know, talking to yourself, basically.
Yeah. And boy, there's a lot to unpack there. But in the words of old school hip hop group De La Soul, stakes is high. I mean, this, it means everything. Now, I think for a noob who comes into cryptocurrency, you know, they stumble onto Twitter and they find these tribes. It's a nice way to then link up with people and kind of get, I don't even know if I'm using it right, but become inculcated in a way, you know, completely awashed in your tribe's philosophy or adopt that. And then that the second stage would be like, now you've intellectually fortified yourself. You've got that armor. So now you're going to go and battle the enemy on that side, whoever the perceived bad guy or gal is. And then that causes some dissonance. And like, it's funny to watch people, like, they have to announce, I'm no longer going to be on Twitter. You know, like, Twitter's a waste of time on Twitter. And, you know, and then when people get blocked or they get muted, or, I mean, people's feelings get really hurt. And I mean, there really is a lot at stake, man.
Yeah. I think that is so true. Every little bit of information you just said there. And I don't even look at it as that wrong, or maybe the better word is that bad, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all humans. You know, we're not going to escape certain human characteristics, even if, you know, we are totally convinced that objective truth says our position is correct and, you know, the facts lay it out and nobody can distract us from the righteous path. Even in that scenario, you know, there's going to be trappings that we put on ourselves. There's going to be phrases, sayings, language that we pick up. There's going to be norms of this is a person with rank in the community, and you know, I'm going to be deferential to them or not criticize them too harshly, and here's a person that does not have rank in that associated community, and so I'll be extra hard on critiquing them. And I think that's something we have to live with.
Great point.
Yeah, and it's just the important thing is balancing that with the objective truth that we purport that we think, because you know, there's the value in the idea of actually assimilating different groups of people into this common purpose. If we did not have everyone assimilating, let's say, into a P2P electronic cash, which is decentralized and not controlled by a Fed or a government or whatever body that takes in form as a centralized and you know, fiat-oriented type of system, that's an assimilation we need to get normies to. We can't just say that, oh no, you can believe whatever you want, you know, and we can't have this shared worldview. But no, we have to actually have some of these things baked into the cake, and we can't have arguments from square one going on every day. I mean, maybe there's like, you know, right. This is the beginner pool, and then we move on to the advanced people working on, you know, especially the development and the big businesses in the space. But to the degree that you advance from beginner to intermediate into advanced, and you're working deep in the space, you know, you're going to need to actually take in a lot of these assumptions or take in a lot of these worldviews and vocabularies, and just have them implicitly inform your decision making. Because again, once you kind of break that, then you cause disunity, and then you cause every decision that we want to do with the movement to kind of go into a, you know, foundational debate.
That's really, really interesting, because Talib puts it into perspective in a way that he says there needs to be a certain level of intolerance. So you have to start off with some principles, whether it's ideological or, you know, however you want to phrase that. But here are some basic standards by which we're operating, and this is what we believe. And then there's a danger of pushing that too far. In the BCH community, of which I'm most familiar, we had what a lot of us considered a bad actor or a toxic force. And I'm trying not to, you know, I think most people would know who I'm referring to. And for a long time, some of us have been warning others who were then pushing back and saying, no, this is a good person. You know, maybe a little abrupt here and there, but you know, we need to take this person seriously or whatever. And the other, of course, I'm going to paint myself as being the good guy in this scenario, and being wizened and never wrong. But you know, I think we tolerated that person and or that kind of personality far too long, and it ended up having, in my opinion, disastrous consequences. And what was interesting is to find solace, you would have to go outside of our bubble, which was being, you know, sort of polluted with, we didn't know where the ideology began and the toxicity ended. And so outside of the bubble, and say the ether or the ETH community, maybe even BTC maxis, right? They were like saying, hey, like, whatever you think, but you know, this person's a turd. And so I think there's a lesson there too. So before we go too much further here, let's end on this idea. Give our listeners of the Peter Ryan Report here on CoinSpice a couple of good accounts to follow on Twitter that might round you out a bit.
That's a great question to think about. Trying to find personalities that obviously you agree with, but also that can provide you you know, pushback and can check yourself. I think that's always important. So let's just throw out, I think Bryce Wiener is a pretty cool guy. Definitely might not agree with everything he says, but he's definitely putting forth a signal and a lot of noise that is definitely worth reading into some of his threads and what he's chucking out there. Similarly, Chris DeRose is a great guy. I'm always partial to checking out what he has to say. He's always talking about the breakdown of how these decentralized networks work, what are the definitions that we use in this space, and how do we think about actually, you know, moving forward in a way that's practical. Santi Siri is another great account. He's in the ETH community. He's working on a app called democracy.earth, which is trying to enable voting, not just for government-oriented activities, but also for any sort of non-political organization of people that requires sort of voting. And he's doing that on ETH, and he's creating his own token. And so far, he's demoing and trying to pioneer in that space. And he gives a lot of, not so much as disagreement with some of the more right-wing, or you would say maybe libertarian-oriented views in the space, but he gives a window into what I view as some sort of leftist crypto ideology. Not to say that he is a leftist or he is one ideology or the other. I just find that some of his tweets often give you a perspective that you aren't seeing usually in the crypto world. And, you know, just saying that sentence should make you want to listen to him more, probably. Yeah, so those are three accounts that are pretty good. You know, there's this guy, Kelso, on CoinSpice. He's also a great Twitter account to follow.
Well, obviously, we're going to link to all those three guys in the show notes of the Peter Ryan Report, episode one on CoinSpice here. Fantastic. Great stuff, man. Really appreciate it. And can't wait for the next episode.
Same here. And for anybody that wants to follow me, go to Twitter @_PeterRyan. You can catch the latest things I'm doing. I'm going to be providing more in-depth crypto research coming in the future. I'm going to be launching some more media projects. You can catch my last one, Risky Presents Blockchain, on Amazon Prime and Vimeo right now, as well as check some of the YouTube clips that are out there that are giving you a little bit of a taste of what that documentary series is about.
You're listening to the Peter Ryan Report on CoinSpice.io.